Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thanks for coming along tonight to the Sydney Institute, where Professor Ross Fitzgerald makes a welcome return and the Reverend Fred Nile makes a welcome first appearance. And the discussion is on the 2016 federal election. So briefly, I'll introduce our speakers. Professor Ross Fitzgerald is the Australian Sex Party's lead Senate candidate in New South Wales. The Australian Sex Party is contesting the Senate in all states. He's an emeritus professor, an author, a columnist and a satirist. And the Honourable, Reverend the Honourable Fred Nile, MLC, a member of the Upper House in New South Wales, he's federal president of the Christian Democratic Party. And the Christian Democratic Party is also contesting the Senate in all states and has a heavy presence in the House of Representatives in New South Wales. So we're going to lead off with Professor Fitzgerald. We'll go to the Reverend Fred Nile. We'll come and have questions and finish no later than the top of the hour. Ross Fitzgerald, you're on.
Thank you. Thanks, bro. As my old teacher at Melbourne High School, Norton Hobson, used to say, if you're going to say something controversial, boys, always wear a suit. So here I am, standing before you this evening, suited and booted, with my Member of the Order of Australia pin on one lapel and my Australian Sex Party badge on the other. A fine symmetry, don't you think? There are two reasons why I joined the Sex Party and why I accepted pole position as the party's lead Senate candidate in New South Wales. First is the impressive example set by the classy, media-savvy founder of the Sex Party, Fiona Patten, both as a long-term lobbyist with her co-founder, the inimitable Robbie Swan, and more recently as an extremely effective Upper House Sex Party MP in Victoria. The second reason is the fact that the Sex Party's key policies resonate and deeply connect with my own. Indeed, as a private citizen and as a public intellectual, I have been campaigning for many of these policies for decades. I strongly support the Australian Sex Party for its principled stand on taxing all religious institutions, supporting same-sex marriage and dying with dignity, as well as its advocacy of evidence-based public policy, including prison reform, immigration reform and drug reform. More generally, I strongly support the Sex Party's advocacy of easily accessible and wide-ranging freedom of information, the promotion of education and the arts, and especially the freedom for adults to decide for ourselves what we choose to read and watch. While I don't have a simplistic three-word catchphrase for the election campaign, I strongly agree with the Sex Party's slogan, "Your life, your choice." And with the subsidiary slogan, my daughter Emerald wrote for me from New York, and that is, we stand for much, much more than sex. In the Senate campaign for New South Wales, my six main policies are, firstly, taxing all religious institutions. Secondly, drug reform, including legalising and taxing marijuana. Three, support for dignity with dying. Four, support for same-sex marriage. Five, immigration reform, including the closure of Manus Island and also of Nauru. And finally, prison reform, including dealing with alcoholism, addiction and illiteracy among inmates and parolees. Having been a member of the Queensland Parole Board and then the New South Wales State Parole Authority for over 20 years, prison reform is one of my main political and policy priorities. The sad and disgraceful reality is that up to a third of our inmates and parolees are functionally illiterate, and that up to 80% of prisoners are addicted to alcohol and other drugs. Unless these key problems are addressed, a great many prisoners and parolees are destined to be recidivists, and hence represent a huge imposition on the public purse. As the Australian Sex Party's lead Senate candidate in New South Wales, I will therefore be stressing the need for drastically increased funding for programs that on one hand tackle literacy and numeracy, and on the other target the great many prisoners and parolees who desperately need to undergo intensive and effective drug and alcohol programs in prison and without. In my Senate campaign, I will also be emphasising how important it is not to let the big parties, the old parties, run roughshod over ordinary citizens, and also how anti-democratic are the recent so-called Senate reforms, whose primary purpose was to try and wipe out minor parties, including the Australian Sex Party. In my opinion, the Greens have become a blight that negates their pretence to be progressive. It was utterly hypocritical for the Greens to join forces with the Coalition and Nick Xenophon in order to make life so difficult for minor parties, forgetting that, not so long ago, they were a minor party themselves. The Greens' major positive is that, as with the Australian Sex Party, they support voluntary assisted dying. The reality is that if we are to be able to die with dignity, we need to actively lobby for the right to make end-of-life choices for ourselves. In particular, we need to demand that the Christian lobby in Australia and their politician fellow travellers explains who gives them the right to demand that palliative care staff must keep people alive against their wishes rather than assisting their end-of-life choices. As with same-sex marriage and other key choices, when it comes to voluntary assisted dying, the personal is political. Indeed, since Alan Jones interviewed me on 2GB about my standing as the Australian Sex Party's lead Senate candidate in New South Wales, I have received a shoal of letters, text and email from people sharing with me their personal stories. The clear reality is that almost all want the laws changed so that in future they and their loved ones can die with dignity. The Sex Party boasts a catchy, well-recognised name, but it also has a policy agenda that is deeply rooted in the most important social issues of our time. A large percentage of people in jail are there for drug offences. Yet who in this room has not used any drug since the double dissolution? No tea or coffee, no wine or beer, not even an out-of-sight puff on the occasional cigar and cigarette. I'm surely right in saying that nobody here has served time for using these addictive and health-challenging drugs. As with same-sex marriage, which is a key sex party policy, there is strong majority public support for voluntary euthanasia, even among those who identify themselves as believing Christians. Yet not only do we forego the huge amounts of money which could be gained from taxing religious institutions, money that could be used to help eradicate homelessness and Indigenous disadvantage, but our elected politicians feel free to enshrine church law into secular law, and this without even a whiff of any large donation to party funds. The politician's so-called war on drugs is a costly failure and an utterly unnecessary waste of police time and resources. Decriminalising some drugs and legalising other drugs, especially marijuana, is long overdue. As with tobacco and alcohol, marijuana should be legalised and taxed, which would also be a source of considerable revenue. Over a decade and a half into the 21st century, Australia urgently needs a new outlook on a number of hitherto sacred cows. This especially includes taxing all religious institutions, which these days seems to me a no-brainer, plus evidence-based drug and prison policy, immigration reform, and the legalisation of same-sex marriage and voluntary assisted dying. Speaking of voluntary assisted dying, may I inform you that this Thursday, June the 9th, the Victorian Parliamentary Committee that has been inquiring into dying with dignity and voluntary euthanasia will release its report. The Sex Party's founder, Fiona Patten, who initiated this committee in the Victoria Legislative Council, is one of the committee's key members. This crucial, indeed critical inquiry into dying with dignity received a record number of submissions, and I'm quietly confident that the report will clearly reflect the lived truths about important end-of-life issues. My fervent hope is that this timely parliamentary report will lead to some early reform of our archaic laws surrounding voluntary euthanasia and medically assisted dying. I commend it strongly to all of those present here at the Sydney Institute and far beyond. In closing, I particularly want to acknowledge the presence of Sue Ray, the number two Senate candidate in New South Wales for the Australian Sex Party, and all our supporters. Thank you for having us. Sorry, there's one final. What? You've lost it?
I've lost the last. Sorry. Hang on a minute. I thought I'd clarified it, but... Oh, thank you for having us. And then it says, by the way, regarding taxing all religious institutions, I'm tempted to quote the opinion attributed to Jesus. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. I'm interested to know, Reverend Niall, whether the Christian Democrats support church institutions paying local, state and federal taxes, or do you believe that they should be tax exempt? To clarify my position as the Sex Party's lead Senate candidate for New South Wales, I advocate that all religious institutions, Christian and non-Christian, should be taxed, not just churches. This includes taxing all Islamic, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist and other religious institutions that run profit-making businesses. And if my memory of the Bible serves me right, after the words spoken by Jesus, the gospel says of the listeners, and they were amazed. How about that?
Thank you, Ross. You haven't left anything else out, have you? That you...
No.
All right, so that's it. Okay, so we now go to the Reverend Fred Nahl for the Christian Democratic Party. Thank you.
Copies of my talk.
Thank you.
I congratulate the Sydney Institute for their excellent activities over many years, particularly Gerard, and for supporting this Q&A on the 2016 Senate election and the debate between the Christian Democratic Party and the Australian Sex Party. Unfortunately, our CDP Senate candidate, Nella Hall, was not available, so I am pleased to represent the CDP and to represent her. I also acknowledge my opponent, Professor Ross Fitzgerald, the Sex Party Senate candidate. I was hoping it would be Fiona, but there you are. I note the dangerous policies of Sex Party, which are based on, according to their policies, which I've been studying in the last day or so, and I have copies of all the Sex Party policies. They say their policies are based, quote, on the broad civil liberation policies, and certainly they are. And I have also brought some literature along with me, so I won't go through all the CDP policies in detail, but with this election, we, with candidates in all the 47 seats in New South Wales, and that's their nice photographs, and with candidates in each of the states running for the Senate. The prettiest one, of course, is my wife, Savannah Nero Nile. And they're running. We have a huge amount of policies, 80 pages of policies on our website, but just we're focusing on these policies for this election, that we are the voice for the traditional definition of family and marriage between one man and one woman. We support one law for all Australians, Australian law, no Sharia law, the Australian law only. Regarding children, our party is very strong in protecting our children, especially from the current so-called safe schools program in our state schools. The agenda against gender, authorised by the main source person, Rod Ward, who acknowledges that she is a committed Marxist. We also defend our religious freedom and freedom of speech. That's why I'm happy that the Institute promotes these opportunities. We're going to have a fair and open discussion of different points of view. And I was pleased talking to Professor Fitzgerald at the beginning, how he congratulated me on my campaign regarding tobacco and alcohol, that we have some parallels, at least on a personal level. I'm not sure whether the Sex Party is campaigning on those issues, but we have some agreement. And so they're the main election policies, but I said we have a massive amount of policies covering a whole range of issues, and they may come up in the question time. And I thought with that taxation issue, perhaps the churches could pay taxation if they could bill the government then for all the social services and other activities that they conduct, helping citizens freely who need help and compassion and practical help and so on. That would be the only reason I would even consider that. For many centuries, Christian values and morals and institutions, such as marriage between a male and a female, were supported by society and governments. But now we see a new aggressive atheism that will not tolerate those values or institutions. This is best demonstrated by the marriage equality campaign for so-called same-sex homosexual marriage. Also by the Green Party, their attempts to ban the opening prayers in the federal and state parliaments. Thankfully, I succeeded in defeating the Green Party motions on two occasions, where the vote finally was 30-5 in the New South Wales upper house on two occasions. So it amounts to Christianity or Christian versus secular. The Sex Party is obviously anti-Christian and wants to remove our Christian heritage and make Australia a secular nation. I believe Australia is a Christian nation, such as removing the opening prayers at the federal and state parliaments. Every morning in parliament, and as you know, I've been a member now for the state upper house for 35 years, and they presented me with this very nice badge to commemorate the 35 years, that we join in the prayers at the beginning of Parliament every day, which I hadn't quite known until I was elected, because you don't go to Parliament at the very beginning of the day. You visit Parliament other times. And I was pleasantly surprised to not only hear the prayers, but now to be actually actively involved in the prayers every morning that we sit, both upper house, lower house, and the federal Parliament. The words were shortened from an opening prayer in the British Parliament way back in the 1600s, but they're very simple. Almighty God, we humbly seek thy blessing upon this Parliament. Guide and direct our deliberations so that all that we do will advance your glory, the glory of God, and the important part, and the true welfare of the people of New South Wales and Australia. So we have that as an opening prayer. Then we say aloud, you may be surprised to know, we actually say the Lord's Prayer aloud like we are in church. And a majority of members actually do say the prayer, for which I'm thankful. Of course, the Green Party, as I said, try to stop the prayers, so they will not even enter the chamber while we're having our prayers. I'm not sure whether they think the prayers are infectious or contagious, so they come in eventually. I've always encouraged them to come in and needn't pray. They can just listen, they can watch, they can look at the roof, whatever they want to do. But they stay outside. That's their choice. Then we have in our federal constitution the words at the very beginning, which state, humbly relying on the blessings of Almighty God. We the people of New South Wales, Victoria and so on, the various states, we come together to form the Commonwealth of Australia, united under the Queen, under a constitutional monarchy. So our constitution, one of the few constitutions actually does, that does acknowledge God. The Americans don't even acknowledge it in their constitution, but ours does, relying on the blessings of Almighty God. Almighty God is the Christian God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. It's not a Hindu God or Allah. That's why those words Almighty God are very important. Regarding Christian schools, and I've been looking at the sex party policies, their policies would virtually stop government funding of all non-government schools, especially Christian and religious schools, which uphold their faith and values for both teachers and students. The CDP supports the freedom of choice for parents to choose the school for their children. They wish to choose a state school or a Jewish school or a Muslim school or a Christian school, then that's the parents' right. I don't believe any party, sex party or others, have a right to take away that choice. In regard to education, CDP is very concerned about the influences of the so-called safe school courses that I've already mentioned in our public school, which promotes fluid gender, which may be new to some of you here tonight, with children choosing whether they will act or dress as a boy or girl at school. We don't have fixed genders. You're not a boy or a girl. You can change as you feel day by day. Abortion. The sex party policy on abortion shows their complete disregard for the rights of the unborn child. The sex party will ensure, as they say, legal and accessible abortion in all states. They also disregard the rights of parents by requiring minors do not have to obtain the permission of a parent or a guardian for an abortion. That's shameful. They support the establishment of safe access zones around abortion clinics, prevent peaceful Christians from even praying near an abortion clinic, as they have already has already occurred in Tasmania through the political activities of the sex party, which always surprises me. They're all great for free speech and protest, as long as they're not Christian protest or Christian activities. They support the rights of people to hold peaceful protest, except those by Christians. They also force doctors who oppose abortion to refer women to an abortionist, otherwise they face fines. And there are doctors who feel very strongly about abortion, and they cannot, in good conscience, even refer a woman to an abortionist, to another doctor who will conduct the abortion. No wonder the angry Catholic nuns, and I just read this in the Sex Party material, that angry Catholic nuns ripped up the Sex Party Manifesto to pieces on the 3rd of June 2016, according to the Sex Party website. Our Christian Democratic Party supports the rights of unborn children and opposes the killing of unborn children. Euthanasia, the Sex Party supports voluntary euthanasia, as you've heard, and assisted deaths for patients. I've studied this issue for the 35 years I've been in Parliament. We've had debates almost every year. The CDP opposes these anti-life policies, which have led to abuse in Holland. So I always study other countries that have introduced it to see, does it work? Do the safeguards work? Where many hundreds, maybe even thousands, of patients who have been euthanised in the Dutch hospital system, and when you say, well, where's the consent form, you can't find one. So there are thousands of people that have been killed in Dutch public hospitals for which there is no consent form. They may have an argument or excuse why they did it, but the law said the patient had to consent. There is no consent. That's why a lot of people in Holland are very frightened to go to hospital. The Sex Party, in regard to drugs, supports the legalisation of all drugs for personal use, which would sabotage the campaign to reduce the impact of drugs. Our CDP campaign is to build a safe, drug-free society so as to protect our young people. I visited Sweden. Sweden was a very permissive society and had massive drug problems. And they became so serious that all the parties, from the Greens to the Conservative, sort of Christian Democratic equivalents, all joined together to vote to make Sweden a drug-free society. And they've had a massive success, and their drug rates have dropped below any other country in the world, and particularly lower than Australia, drug use. Prostitution. The Sex Party supports the legalisation of prostitution and brothels, which regularly, in our opinion, exploit and abuse vulnerable women and girls. And over the years, I've had prostitutes working in brothels ring me up and ask for my help, say, we're being abused and threatened by people who run the brothel. This one was at Hurstville. Can you help me, Mr. Nile? And so on. So I've had first-hand information and dealings with the issue. Pornography, our party opposes the sex party support. From what I've read, they wish to legalise X-rated material. It's banned in New South Wales and all the states except the ACT and the Northern Territory through a loophole in the law. And we wish to keep that ban because that's very hardcore pornography, which I believe is harmful to the people involved in the production of it, but certainly the impact it has on males who study and become hooked on this sort of material, and I believe is a factor in why we have so many rapes as well. Constitutional monarchy. The sex party also seeks to remove Queen Elizabeth II and replace her with an atheistic republic. Our CDP supports our Australian constitution and our constitutional monarchy, which is currently the Queen, and also the Queen's representatives, the Governor-General and the Governors of each state. They're appointed by the Queen, but they're all nominated by the democratically elected governments. Whether it's a Labor government or a Liberal government, they actually select the candidate to be Governor or Governor-General, and the Queen endorses that choice. So the Queen in no way interferes in the independence of Australia. We are totally 100%, 150% an independent nation. In conclusion, it's very clear from what I've said that voters have a real choice between the Christian Democratic Party and the Sex Party. Hopefully they will choose the Christian Democratic Party. As I said, I've brought some of my material along. This is my newspaper. I publish it every month. This is an election issue. There's about 100 copies outside. They're free. And they may be surprised to see Orthodox bishops actually for the first time being involved in politics and supporting our candidates at public meetings, which is very encouraging to me. The churches usually like to sit on the fence, but I think the marriage issue and other issues now have forced the churches to make a stand and to be involved in politics in a way they have not been involved in our country in past times. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Many thanks to Professor Ross Fitzgerald and to the Reverend Fred Nile. Now, we come to questions and discussion. Sydney Institute does courtesy very strongly, so I call on everyone here tonight to exercise either their Christian charity or their secular humanism, and we'll get through without any problems. So I come to questions. Can I just start with, I think if you both come here, perhaps Ross, you stand on this side, and Fred, you stand on that side,
on the
and
grass,
then, yep, and then when you, I'll disappear soon, and then you just talk to the end of the room. So, just a question first up to you, Ross, because you've mentioned about five or six times the intention of the Sex Party to tax churches, which you then included beyond Christian churches to include other religions. But if you're going to tax not-for-profit organisations, why not tax the Wilderness Society or the trade union movement or the CFMEU or Melbourne University? I mean, not-for-profit organisations don't get taxed. So if you're going to start taxing churches, why not tax all of them?
Yes, as I pointed out, the Sex Party's policy isn't just taxing churches, it's taxing all religious institutions that operate as businesses. Why, for example, should Hillsong, that gets a poultice of money selling memorabilia and clothes, rather like the Collingwood Football Club, why should they be taxed? And why should companies like Sanitarium that have a religious connection not be taxed in the way that, say, Dick Smith Foods is? So one thing I will say, though, and what the Reverend Nile says is absolutely true, unlike the old parties, the major parties, that are very wishy-washy, I don't think you'd say that the Reverend Nile and myself haven't been very clear about a number of specific policies. Just one thing in response to the Reverend.
Well, Ross, I think we'll just leave that there at the moment.
Sure.
Do you want to make a... Because I just want to answer questions at this stage. Fred, do you want to make a comment on that?
Well, I did make a brief answer in my address that I believe the churches do a great deal of work as non-profit organisations. That's the reason why they're not taxed. With all the volunteers who work in those churches, maybe some of the people here tonight are volunteers, why should they be taxed when they're mainly doing things to benefit other people? Whether you want to tax sanitarium, I'd have to investigate that. As far as I know, I'd be surprised if they don't pay tax. I don't know how they could be exempt from tax as a factory producing
and do you think,
breakfast cereals.
Hang on. I don't want to lose control of this as early as this. Lose control a bit later, yeah. Lindsay.
Professor Fitzgerald, the Abbott government failed to get through the Senate a number of measures which it had taken to the 2013 election. Do you regard the elected government in the House of Representatives as having any particular mandate, and how do you balance that against such mandate as you have as a duly elected senator?
Right. If elected, would you regard the government as having a mandate? Yeah.
Yes, I certainly would regard that whichever, I mean, if there is a government, that a clear government, I would regard their, in terms of economic and fiscal policies, of them having a mandate, and I would not, under any circumstances, not support their budgetary and fiscal position.
Same-sex marriage?
Well, I do support same-sex marriage, but that's not a matter of the economy, really, is it?
That's the point I was making.
Now, hang on. You've got to talk to the end of the room. So, hang on. So, just get in the middle here. Okay. Now, are you a mandate kind of guy or not? And you made the point to... So, I guess you're suggesting to Ross Fitzgerald that if a government was elected that wanted a plebiscite on same-sex marriage and the sex party doesn't, would he go along with the government? That's the point
I was making. He was focusing on the economic issue. What would he do with the other issues? But I've had this challenge in those 35 years in the Parliament under Labor governments from Bob Carr right up to now Mike Baird because I've been put in a difficult position where often I've had the balance of power with my associate at one stage with my wife, Elaine, who's since passed away, and for 14 years she was in Parliament. We actually had the balance of power in the upper house. All the bills go through the Assembly, then they go to the upper house, the Council, and we can amend them, defeat them and so on. So that's where the balance of power comes in. So I had to pray this through. Will I be belligerent and throw my weight around? But I believe in the democratic system. The people of our state have elected a government. I respect that government. And so I adopted a policy to be constructive, not obstructive. I believe God revealed that to me. And it was a marvellous policy because it gave me a spirit of cooperation with each government, whether it's Labor or Liberal. And I've been able to successfully pass important bills through the upper house supported by either a Labor government or a Liberal government. Normally, people who are minor party members or independents never get a bill passed through Parliament. I've had a large number passed now, such as banning tobacco advertising, banning smoking in public places, smoking in cars. I've also changed the provocation laws. That was my bill that stopped women being abused through the misuse of those laws and so on. I could go through many other bills that I put through, and that was because I was being constructive. So it worked both ways. I say to the government, I'm not really happy with this bill, this new law. It needs to have improvements, amendments. And they say, well, what are they? Because we need your vote. I say, well, I've got 6 points. And often I'm not that brilliant. I listen to people, to the trade union movements and other groups, and they give me their concerns. I then put those into amendments, and I amend a major bill in 6 very important ways to make the bill far more compassionate, caring and effective, and the government gets all the credit for it.
Can I just say something or not?
Well, briefly, yeah.
But very briefly. Yeah. What the Reverend Niall says about himself is actually true of Fiona Patten, the Upper House Sex Party MP in Victoria. By having a similar approach, she's been able to gain the respect of all sides of politics and to get through very important legislation, including stopping people getting very close to abortion clinics to make life very, very difficult.
Sadly.
Yeah.
There's a question over here. Yes?
In relation to Professor Fitzgerald's comment about the taxation of religious bodies, it's one thing, I think, to tax commercial entities, and he nominates a sanitarium health food company. Is this going to include, for example, the St. Vincent's type outlet?
So the suggestion is if it's okay to tax something like the sanitarium company that's producing the cereal breakfast foods, is it also okay to tax the St. Vincent de Paul Society, which is essentially a Christian organisation that makes profits on which it doesn't pay tax?
in the main, and this is not the sex party's policy, but it's my own position, I'm of the mind that works for charity should be non-taxed. What I'm concerned about is religious institutions that make money out of businesses, and I've used the example of Hillsong making a poultice of money from selling all their merchandise.
Now, hang on, we've got to move on. So where else are we? It's a question, Zev. Ross, keep your
hands. Professor Fitzgerald, I must say I'm a bit disappointed you are sex party and there was no sex in your talk. But there are two things I'd like to ask you. First one, migration, you mentioned many times. So could you say a bit more about your policy on immigration? And second, can you reassure us that if you have balance of powers, you won't block the budget?
Okay, so the suggestion is you didn't talk about sex in your talk, but what about immigration, and what would your attitude to the deficit be? Keep your hands.
Yes.
Sorry,
is that right?
Yeah.
I thought I made it clear.
Really, yeah,
oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, you were going to bring blood in your face, right?
Sorry about that. I thought I'd made it clear that the sex party wouldn't block the budget. That if a government came in, we would regard budgetary policies and finance policies as part of an economic mandate. What was the other question?
Immigration. Attitude on migration.
Our attitude on migration is to close Manus Island and also Nauru as soon as practicable. I mean, it's a deeply moral problem, and I'd be most interested to know what Reverend Niall has to say about what decisions should be made about Manus Island and Nauru, and whether we should, under any circumstances, have people say come to Australia in regional areas of Australia. I'd be most interested.
Now, Ross, you're not asking the questions today.
You're not the chairman.
But no.
But I'm happy to answer
it. You can answer it, but after that, someone else will ask the questions. You're given the speech, someone else asks the questions. Okay, your response?
No, I'm very concerned about assisting people who need assistance. And for example, when we had the situation with the Vietnamese people coming here, the Vietnamese boat people, I was the main person that formed a national refugee committee in cooperation with other organisations, including the RSL, to provide reception for them, accommodation and jobs and so on. And that was a major reason why there was so little friction with thousands of Vietnamese refugees coming to Australia. Mm. And we would do the same with other groups coming to Australia. But we would obviously give a priority to help Christian refugees from Iraq and Syria who have been murdered in their hundreds, if not their thousands, I think one every 5 minutes, who are crying out for help, that we should give them assistance as refugees coming to Australia.
As you know, 95% of the Indochinese refugees came from resettlement camps with valid visas on Qantas planes. I mean, they didn't come. Only 2,059 came unlawfully, so it was a different kind of problem. Okay, where do we go from now? Right down the back.
We made them welcome, that's the point.
Yeah, well, that's true. Right down the back.
Yes. My question is for Richard Niall. So you rightly mentioned that government generals are appointed by a democratic, or as a result of a democratic process. You mentioned that Australia is, as you can see, 100% independent. My question is then, given that now strategically our alliance with the United States is far more significant than that of Britain, what value is there for retaining a constitutional monarchy and our connection with Britain?
Question about the value in retaining a constitutional monarchy. Yeah.
Well, I think the answer to that is what we have in Australia. We are one of the most stable democracies in the world. Never had a civil war, other than some of the mining problems way back, Peter Law and so on. But in the main, the constitution has worked for Australia. Our constitutional monarchy has worked. And I believe the process we have through the constitution with governors and governor generals, there's always a threat that when you break the constitution, when governments get carried away with their own self-importance, there's somebody over them that can remove them. And I know how politicians think. They need to have that ability, or someone has that ability to remove them or chastise them. That's the only reason we don't have dictatorships in Australia. I'm sure there are politicians who would love to be a dictatorship and not have elections, be elected once, and as I do in South America, declare I'm now the permanent president for life.
Ross, the sex party have a policy on constitutional monarchy?
I'm not sure.
Here's your chance to invent it.
Ken?
What?
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Oh, Miss Cheryl. I believe you're quite a radical atheist, yet in your speech you made mention several times of our good Lord Jesus in your speech and his views. How are these reconciled?
It's quite in the Bible, yes.
Yes.
It's very good. Very happy for you.
If I may, I'll just respond to something that the Reverend said. We've had two coup d'etats in Australia, all connected with alcohol. The overthrow of Governor Bligh by the Rum Corps and getting rid of the administrator of Darwin, who had the temerity to increase the price of beer. But to answer Ken's question about... most people don't know, but for a brief, fairly catastrophic, before I stopped drinking, I taught biblical studies at Brighton High School. So that's a little known fact, not religious instruction.
Did that drive you to the drink?
No. And I stopped drinking and using on Australia Day 1970. And certainly the Reverend... Yeah, and certainly the... Dr. Wodak, who's a very close friend of mine, is a great supporter of the role that the Reverend Nile plays in relationship to tobacco and alcohol. And I was mentioning Bob Santa Maria's brother, Joe Santa Maria, said two things to me I've never forgotten. I said, what is the main drug problem here in Melbourne? And he said, alcohol, alcohol, and alcohol. And he once wrote, there was an alcoholic woman, very rich woman, very proud woman, and he wrote her a reference. On the outside was the address of Alcoholics Anonymous in Melbourne. And Dr. Santa Maria had written, I prescribe large doses of Alcoholics Anonymous for this very reluctant debutante.
Very good. Right. So right down the back and then up here, yeah?
I've got a question for the Reverend Nile. You mentioned you're protecting against Sharia law in Australia. I'd like you to...
About what?
About Sharia law in Australia.
Oh, yes, yep. Yes.
I'd like you to detail the finer points of the threat that Sharia law poses to Australia's national security.
So he wants you to detail the finer points that Sharia law would pose to Australians in Australia, if implemented. Okay.
Oh, I thought everybody was pretty clear about that. How the law, the Islamic law, Sharia law, treats women, for example, the second-class citizens. There's quite a few aspects of Sharia law that are totally objectionable to any democratic society. In fact, the people promoting Sharia law used to have placards saying, let's get rid of democracy, let's get rid of democracy. They don't want democracy. They want a totalitarian regime that they have with Sharia law, which also brings in the halal food, so that we're all eating halal food now with halal certification on products, which is all phony, but people, companies are now paying taxes to the halal certifiers, millions of dollars, which are going to build mosques in Australia and Indonesia and other places.
There's a question here.
Does Professor Fitzgerald have any comments on fluidity of gender as has been espoused in the Safe Schools program?
Right, does the Sex Party have a policy on fluidity of gender as espoused in the Safe Schools program?
Again, it's not a policy that I'm particularly au fait with. The answer is I'm not sure.
Well, I think you better find out and get the right answer. I think it's very important.
Well, I suppose...
It's in 500 schools, that
yes.
program.
I mean, so. I suppose prima facie, I'd be in favour of identity, self-identity, so that if a person regarded themselves as transsexual or other forms of sexual, that should be accommodated for in the school system.
There's a question
for
yep.
Reverend Noll. As you're probably aware, Fiona Patten was one of the first politicians to call for a royal commission into child sexual abuse in the churches. I'd like to know what your opinion, and you have conversations with your God. What does your God tell you about this, what can only be described as horrific child sexual
and
abuse?
And I agree. I'm totally in agreement with the Royal Commission and anything that can be done. One of my burning desires when I first came to Parliament was to expose paedophilia, whether it was in the church or in the medical profession or the legal profession and so on, which it was and probably is still in many parts of our society.
Yes.
And we probably shouldn't have a Royal Commission into the legal profession as well, and each of those areas. But I sometimes think, I had discussions with Cardinal Pell about this issue, because I got to know him quite well, being the Archbishop of Sydney, as to whether some of those priests were, in fact, paedophiles who joined the church as a priest to have access to children. That's my own personal theory. I don't think a lot of these people suddenly went from being a God-fearing priest to abusing 5-10-year-old children. I think they knew, as some people do, become Boy Scout masters, church boys, youth leaders and so on, and then they get caught. I think they've seen a very easy market for them to penetrate and abuse children.
Just on reflection, it's going back in 1975, it was you and a couple of others, including the Catholic and Anglican leaders here, who spoke out against the ABC's decision to give soft interviews to pederasts, and the ABC then chairman's statement that we should accept that all men will sleep with boys, or some men will sleep with boys, and I think you were the one who spoke out on that.
Yes, the ABC was virtually endorsing that on their late line program, radio programs, which again is a tragedy. The only value of that program was that they did explain their strategies, the two young men on the program, where they would deliberately go to a park and watch a mother and children pick out the child that they wanted, then pretend to be a friend of the mother, woo the mother, in fact become like the boyfriend, and they said our whole intention was to get the child, which they successfully did.
You want to make a comment on that, Ross?
Well, I mean, I think the situation in religious institutions is perhaps intensified, but the problem of paedophilia is a terrible problem, and I think the Reverend Niall's right that there are some occupations that people are drawn to, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, that make their capacity to abuse children much easier than it might have otherwise been, especially if they belong to an institution where there's a sense of loyalty to the institutions.
There's a question here. Yeah. Okay, do you want to make?
Yeah, just a quick comment. I had a big debate with Premier Ram, because he was a libertarian and didn't want any controls over pornography. So I had to work out how I could get around his philosophy. So I focused then on paedophilia and the abuse of children through pornography. So he reluctantly agreed to ban child pornography in New South Wales.
There's a question here.
Yeah. Question for the Reverend. When you were talking, you used the word atheist in various contexts, including aggressive atheists, etc., as though being an atheist was somehow anathema and almost a satanic thing that was evil. I think, as Ross has probably shown, you can be such a thing as a Christian atheist, in the sense that you have social values that are Christian, and you are, as opposed to Islamism, for example, as a Christian.
Yes, I was.
The suggestion was you use the term aggressive atheism, and the suggestion is there's such a thing as a kind of Christian atheism, which is...
Yeah, no, there's some very good atheists, and there's some, maybe surprisingly, there's some atheists who vote for our party, and they tell us that, but I was referring to a new aggressive atheism, whereas in the past, atheists or atheistic movements tolerated Christianity, and we got on side by side. And from my observation now, as someone involved with politics and issues, there's a change in the climate. There's now a new aggressiveness against the Christian faith. And some of it's been illustrated by what the Sex Party would seek to do.
Although, interestingly enough, the Sex Party gains a lot of support from believing. The Sex Party, we gain a lot of support from believing Christians and what one might call ethnic Christians, like Jared.
My strongest support comes from the ethnic communities.
You mean cultural?
Cultural, that was the word. Yeah.
Cultural Christian.
Sorry, Anne. No, hang on. Peter Coleman.
My question is to both of the speakers. The policies that they identified as the policies of their party or parties also have significant followers in the mainstream parties, the Labour Party, the Liberal Party. Do you not think that you would have more influence? I'm not for a moment denying that you've had some influence and you can point point to occasionally, but would you not have the same or greater influence operating within the mainstream party?
The suggestion is that both of you have positions that are held within the mainstream parties, the proposition is that maybe you'd have more influence if you worked within a mainstream party rather than within a minority party.
Yes, I'm well aware of that, and I work very closely. In fact, most of the successes I have in the Parliament with the final vote, like that vote on prayer, was by forming a coalition of Christian and pro-Christians in the Labor Party and in the Liberal National Parties. How do I get 30 members out of 42? Now, that happened with our euthanasia debates. All the bills on euthanasia, I've been able to coordinate a defeat, roughly 25 members voting against it to 16 voting for it. That's by getting members from all the different parties that work together who have a similar world view. So I'm well aware of that, but I did make a deduction when I weighed up. I felt things were going bad in our society. I should do something about it, how to do it. And I realised from my contact with people in the major parties, often you're stifled in the major parties and you have to follow the party policy, the party vote, sometimes against your own conscience. So I thought, having a Christian party, we are the ginger up group to force both the parties to make sure they do keep strong pro-family, pro-marriage, pro-Christian policies in their parties. That's our strategy. I shouldn't have told you that, but that's how it works.
Ross can come here.
Well, that's one reason why the Sex Party regards the major parties as the old parties, because they stand for very little. You've got a Prime Minister who's a sort of marshmallow mouth, who'll say virtually anything, as Pauline would say, and you've got a Labor leader who's hopeless. Why is it when 75% of Australians support voluntary euthanasia and 70% of believing Christians support voluntary euthanasia, that when bills have come up, not a single member of the Liberal Party or the National Party has actually voted in favour of voluntary euthanasia? So we on the Sex Party feel that this double dissolution gives us an opportunity to think outside the square. And I don't know what you think, but I think the Liberals and the Liberal Nats and the Labor Party are an old series of political parties.
Are you having one question? The question down here hasn't, yes?
Professor, your ideas, your attacks, religious, all religious institutes, comes across a little bit more as an attack on religious rather than just promoting your values. Can you please explain that?
Suggestion is that Ross Fitzgerald is engaged less on promoting his values and more on an attack on Christian religions.
Well, I pointed out what my six major policy objectives are, and the first one is indeed taxing all religious institutions that operate as businesses. But we've got a very wide policy supporting same-sex marriage, drug reform, prison reform, legalising and taxing marijuana. By the way, what the Reverend Niall said about our policy about drugs isn't quite right. The Sex Party doesn't believe in legalising all drugs. We believe in decriminalising all drugs, so that it is a health problem, not a legal problem. We do support legalising marijuana and taxing marijuana.
Yeah, that's one of the hoaxes in the drug debate, to use the word decriminalising instead of legalising. When I'm in Parliament, what do we do? We repeal the law that was there, and that's what happens when you decriminalise, you legalise. There's no law there. The item, the product, is legal. And I think it's just been a very clever strategy of people promoting those policies to use new jargon, and one of them is decriminalisation. People say, well, that doesn't sound too bad. So they don't oppose it.
Question here? Yes?
Yes?
Oh,
me. Yep. Reverend, you had discussed about gender fluidity and the Safe Schools program. This is just my reading of your tone, but you seemed quite mocking of the idea of the notion that there are children that have consideration, that may have identity issues with their gender. I was wondering, there are demonstrated cases of families with children that do wish to switch genders, and people who transition, and there is a large case number of people who, you know, fall to suicide or self-harm, including their parents. And in that process, I was wondering if...
Okay, so the suggestion is that you were a bit mocking about children who want to transition from one gender to another, and that these are real problems that affect the children and their parents.
Well, I don't... I'm sorry if you gave that impression. I don't mock the people involved in it. I've had a number of transgender people that I've debated with. In fact, one lady on Q&A became quite a good friend of mine after the Q&A program, sharing with me her problems as a transgender person from being a bus driver for 30-odd years and becoming a female. So I understand that, but I'm against propaganda going into the minds of sensitive children who are going through puberty, which is already disturbing, as we all go through that stage, to have people saying, are you really sure you're male, are you really sure you're female, and you could change. And you may have seen the ABC program with the mother laying out two sets of clothing for her son. Tomorrow, do you want to wear the girl's uniform or the boy's uniform? I don't believe that's helpful to the boy, to children.
Ross, do you want to make a comment on that? Okay, so have I missed anyone? So there's a question here. Yeah.
My question's to Reverend Nile. Given that you've spoken favourably of democracy and mandates in general, does that mean that the CDP would accept same-sex marriage legislation if the plebiscite shows that the majority of Australians support it?
Okay, so if the plebiscite gets up on same-sex marriage, will your party support the result?
No, we wouldn't, because a plebiscite is a poll. We would if it was a referendum. We make a distinction in our party between a plebiscite and a referendum. And I think that's why Malcolm Turnbull's gone for the plebiscite, because it's a wishy-washy situation, which is just polling people, and it has no legal authority anyhow. Nothing need happen after it. Whereas you have a referendum, that then becomes a decision of the people. And it also has rules. The plebiscite has no rules. Well, they can make rules, but at this stage it has no rules. That is, the question has to be totally independent and genuine. It has to be done by experts. Has no political angle to it. If the question for the plebiscite, which I think the marriage equality people want, is are you in favour of marriage equality, half Australia will say yes, not knowing what it means. I have people now saying to me, well, aren't men and women equal? They don't realise it's talking about marriage between two men. So that's why a referendum is the preferred approach, a proper independent question and funding for the yes case and the no case by the federal government. So the public is fully informed and makes a proper reasoned decision when they vote.
Ross, briefly, does the Sex Party have a...
For different reasons, I agree with the Reverend Nile that the plebiscite is a very wishy-washy alternative. And another example of the things that Malcolm Turnbull was supposed to believe in, like same-sex marriage, he's just sort of passed over. So I agree.
Yeah, that's his compromise.
And there is a big difference between a referendum and a plebiscite.
Yeah.
Well, I know there are more questions around, but we always try to finish on time, and we've ended up with agreement. So, what a good place.
Can we mention about the Senate?
Well, hang on, no, you can't. It would only happen at the Sydney Institute that the Sex Party and the Christian Party agree. I mean, that's
we agreed on a lot of the issues on the liquor, the alcohol.
On liquor, yeah.
The tobacco.
The United. The united in falsehood on some of these matters, yes, yes. Look, I'd love to go on, Ross, but we're not, because we're right on time. So I just want to say thanks to the Reverend Fred Nile and to Professor Ross Fitzgerald. Some people say it's a dull election campaign. It's certainly a long election campaign. But tonight we've had a very lively and interesting night, because we've had two well-known Australians who hold strong views and are happy to express their views coherently, with evidence to go with them. So it's been a very lively night, and I wish both the Christian Democratic Party and your senators across the six states, and the Australian Sex Party and your senators across the six states, all the best. And it's been a great night tonight, so thanks to both of you, and good luck.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.